Hi, family. I'm an addict. My name is Gina.
Hi, Gina.
God, there are so many of you out there. I know you can't see from the way I see, but there are a lot of you out there. I want to thank God for another day clean and another day of life, and for anybody who takes that for granted. A lot of addicts didn't open their eyes today. I don't take for granted every day that I have clean, and I thank you, God. And thank you to Central California. You have been so welcoming. You have been so wonderful. Danny, thank you for all the phone calls. And I have to tell you the story. Danny's wife speaks very limited English, so I called the house one day. I returned a phone call. And I have to thank his wife for her graciousness, because she picked up the phone, and of course I'm going to impress her with my New York street Spanish. And she finally says to me, "I speak English." So I guess she wasn't as impressed as I was. But she was gracious enough to tell Danny that she thought it was cute that I tried, so please tell Anna thank you. For anybody, you know, it's always intimidating. You go someplace and you always run into somebody who says, "I heard you speak here, I heard you speak there," and you think to yourself, "Oh God, I hope I don't say the same thing." But you know, the reality is that story that I had out there, the same story that I got out there, and the only way that I'm going to get a new one is to go back out and use again, and you know what? I'm not doing that. One of the things that I believe in is that Narcotics Anonymous meetings are not to talk about drugs. And why I say that is because I didn't come here because I didn't know how to use. I come here because I didn't know how to live without using. And I believe that when I get into war story and I start to get real specific with my past, for anybody sitting out there with a reservation, the excuse that you're looking for as to why you're different, why you don't belong, why maybe you didn't do what I did, I'm not giving it to you. You have a reservation, you want to find a reason to use, find another one. But I'll tell you this, one of the things that I talk about is how I feel, because I believe that in the common bond of the disease of addiction that we share, that it's health beyond any of the differences that we have. I don't care what color you are, I don't care what religious background you come from, I don't care what sexual preference you have. When I tell you that I'm an addict and I talk about how I feel, I know that you understand. The other reason that I really don't talk a lot about using is because the truth is that most of what I remember about using is an absolute lie. I was one of those very grandiose addicts who made up a whole lot of stories, and you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I can get to the point where I told a story enough time that, yeah, three times it's proof. You know, and there's a lot of times that I look back that I have to tell you, I've told the story so many times that even in my mind, you know, after a few years clean, I'm not sure if it was bullshit or not anymore. But I do remember how I felt, because when I stopped using, those same feelings were still there. I remember being a child back in elementary school, and it seemed like the kids would throw parties, and they'd bring in a stack of invitations, and they would go around the classroom, and they would drop one on everybody's desk but mine. And on Valentine's Day, they would bring cards for the class, and every kid would get a Valentine but me. And when recess came, we walked outside and you all broke up into little groups, and I stood there waiting for somebody to ask me to come along. And I can't tell you if all of those things really happened the way I remember, but I know that the feelings are exactly as how they happened. I started using around my 11th birthday, and I know that I can look back at my behavior. And I was waiting for my first chemical to come along. That was the only thing in my first 11 years that I did not do. I had every behavior. I had every attitude. I remember my mother telling me when I was a child that I seemed to have been born angry. And I never understood why. And my addiction took off real quickly from the time I started to use. I did all those things I said I wouldn't do. I went to all the places I said I wasn't going to go. I hung out with all you people I said I wasn't ever going to be with, and I sure wouldn't be like. I was about 12 years old, and I started to pray on a daily basis to die. Now, I have to tell you that I grew up in the 60s in what was then in the 60s called a mixed marriage. I had a Jewish mom and an Italian Catholic father. I don't know that I believed in God. I know that I felt very confused about God. You know, and I'm not knocking anybody's religion. I'm only sharing my experience. But my Italian Catholic grandmother used to take me to Mass. And she would talk to me about this God who loved me, was there for me, would be with me always, and would zap you for shit that you didn't even have to do. You just had to think about it, and it was a sin. So I started asking this God every night that I didn't believe was there to die. And every morning when I opened up my eyes, it was just another... It was like another thing to me that convinced me that he wasn't there because I was still living. I started to do institutions, and my institution of choice was getting locked up on the flight deck. And I need to tell you that I never got locked up for being crazy. I always got locked up for acting crazy. And I knew the difference. I knew deep down in my heart that I wasn't crazy. I didn't know how to stop the behavior. I didn't know how to stop acting the way that I was. When I was 11 years old, I heard the line that probably every female in here, and maybe a lot of you males have heard, if you love me, you'll do it. And I wanted to be loved, so I did. And, you know, up until that point in my life, I had pretty much been like a little bit of a nerd in school, and all of a sudden, overnight, I went from being a nerd to being that girl that she wrote about on the bathroom walls. I was that girl that you wrote on the bathroom wall about. I was that girl that you called her house and yelled whore in the phone at her mother and hung up. You know, I've come to a point today where I can forgive myself for accepting sex when all I really wanted was love and I just didn't know how to ask for it. But for those few minutes, if I could lie down with somebody and feel like somebody cared, that's all I ever wanted. You know, when I was 15, you know, I hear people talk about sometimes, my best decisions got me to Narcotics Anonymous. I need to tell you, my best decision on my best day couldn't have ever come up with a place like Narcotics Anonymous. My best decision at 15 years old was, why have you given it away for free for 4 years? You know, they pay you for this. Okay, that was my best decision. By the time I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was 20 years old. So for anybody who's young in here, who's feeling a little out of place, like you don't belong, people look older, this program has saved some of our lives that we did get here when you were your age, and we lived long enough to become this age. I came to NA not because I wanted to get clean. I didn't come to NA because I wanted to stop using. I came to Narcotics Anonymous for one very simple reason, and that was because I didn't have any place else left to go. When I walked into my first meeting and you told me to keep coming back, I thought that was the most profound thing that I had ever heard, because I don't know about you, but I wasn't the type of person people welcome back. People didn't ask me to come back. They usually told me, there's the door, don't let it hit you on the ass on the way out, and get out now. My family didn't want me around. I didn't have any friends. And I remember my last day of using, sitting on the streets of Manhattan, huddled in a rainy doorway, knowing it was over, that I just didn't have the fight left in me anymore. I just couldn't keep on doing it. And for anybody who's experienced the process of surrender, there is such a relieving feeling in finally being able to say, it's over. You know, I had been blessed to hear about Narcotics Anonymous. And you know, you guys out here in California are real lucky. You know, I sat here at the countdown and I'm real envious watching people from the 30s through the 20s stand up at almost every year. Where I came from in New York, we didn't have Narcotics Anonymous for a lot of years because we had a state law called the Rockefeller Laws that were named after our former governor that made it illegal for two or more addicts to congregate. And the Rockefeller Laws made it illegal for us to have Narcotics Anonymous in New York. And we had some attempts at starting it underground, and they didn't last very long because the cops used to find out where they were and they'd go round everybody up and arrest them. And it wasn't until late 1981 that finally NA opened up. And our fellowship, as big as it is in New York, we're really still such a baby compared to you. You know, somebody told me about Narcotics Anonymous, and I walked into my first meeting in April of 1983. And I'm very grateful to tell you that I haven't found a reason to use ever since then. And I came into that meeting, and it was funny, I called that addict, thank you, sweetie. I came into that meeting, and when I called that addict, she said to me, can you hold on? It was a Sunday night. There were two meetings in the whole borough of Manhattan, Sunday and Wednesday, and he said, you missed the Sunday night meeting. Can you hold on? And I said, I think so. And I walked into my first meeting on April 27, 1983. I had 2 days clean, 3 days clean. And I walked in, and, you know, once again, I walked in, and I looked at everybody, and I judged you, and I said, oh, man, I don't belong here. Because, you know, back then in New York, I thought that NA stood for Needles Anonymous. Because it seemed to me like I was the only one in the room who hadn't shot heroin. And I didn't want to tell you I didn't shoot heroin because I didn't want you to tell me I didn't belong here. But the fellowship was so new in New York, and we really didn't have anybody who had any clean time, and we really didn't have anybody who worked any steps, that all we did was sit and talk about using. So after a couple of weeks, I learned all the terminology from hearing you share, and all of a sudden I started to raise my hand and join in. It was a lot easier lying to you that I had shot dope than a couple of years later having to get honest with you that I had never shot dope. But I did everything exactly the opposite of the way that you asked, you know, the way that you suggested that I do it. And I don't suggest to anybody that you recover the way I have, but I believe that it isn't, you know, my place to interfere with anybody's journey or anybody's process. You know, the lessons that we learn are the lessons that we make the mistakes ourselves. I don't know about anybody else, but I had a mom who, when I was a kid, told me not to touch the stove, that it was hot and I was going to get burned. And the minute she told me, I had to wait for her to turn her back so I could go touch it and see if she was lying or not. But when I got burned, I never touched the stove again. And that's the way that recovery has had to be for me. I have had to go out there and keep touching the stove and testing what you've told me before I believe that it's hot. And I'm grateful that you've all allowed me to have the process that I've had. And I try to do that with the women that I sponsor, to let them always know that no matter what you ever do in here, I will always love you. I may not agree with you. I may not back you. I may wish that I could stop you from your pain, but I will never interfere with your process or you getting this whatever way that you can. I love you unconditionally, and I was taught by my first sponsor that everything in here is a choice, and it was all dependent upon how much pain I was willing to stand. And there's some days that my tolerance for pain is a little higher than others. So I came late and I left early. I sat in the back and I talked to the men. Let's be honest. I also didn't have any humility at all. I mean, I'm really intelligent, if you didn't notice. I'm college educated. And because of that, I don't think I need to ask questions. I could figure stuff out for myself. So I heard people talk about getting a sponsor. Well, I didn't have the humility to ask you what a sponsor was, so I figured I'll figure this one out for myself. So a sponsor, I decided, was like when you wanted to join the union, you needed somebody who was already a member to sponsor you to get in. So you kept saying to me, Gina, do you have a sponsor? And I didn't want to tell you, I walked in here on my own. So I said, yeah, I got a sponsor. It took me a long time of listening to finally understand what a sponsor was so that I could finally ask somebody to be my sponsor. There aren't any stupid questions in Narcotics Anonymous. The only dumb one is the one that you don't ask, and it just might kill you. If there's something somebody's saying that you don't get in here, please grab somebody, take them on the side, and ask them what's going on. I had about 4 months clean, and I met a man who had 87 days. Let me absolutely assure you that two sickos do not make a wello. And for as long and as many times as I have tried, recovery is definitely not sexually transmittable. Now, I always like to tell tell this lie about how this we had this relationship, but the reality is we had a one-night stand. And I don't know about the kind of addict you are, but I'll tell you the kind of addict I am. About 2 o'clock in the morning, I started to plan our wedding out. You know, you smile at me and I start picking furniture. So I had this all laid out. And I got up the next morning and I said goodbye full of all of my plans for the future. And he never called me again. And it was the first time clean that I had felt rejection. And I don't care how long you've been clean and how many steps you have in your life, being rejected doesn't feel really good. And I made a conscious decision that I was going out and I was going to go use. And I must have heard something that you said, because I finally picked up the phone and I called somebody and they suggested to me that I pray. And you know, my only memory of God was that God that I was praying to from 12 years old who kept letting me live. And I thought, well, I'm on my way out already. I don't have anything to lose. And I got down on my knees and I asked a God that I didn't believe in, and I asked a God that I really wasn't sure was there, if he would help me hang on and just stay clean for one more day. The miracle came not only that I stayed clean, but I really had a profound change in the way that I was looking at this program. I began to realize that this wasn't my program. This is the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It was the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. I don't believe that you can work this program cafeteria style. Take what you want and leave the rest. You're either going to put the principles into your life or you're not. And if I was going to put these principles into my life, then I needed to find somebody who had these principles in their life who could help guide me through them. And so I finally got it into my head that I needed a sponsor. So I started to look for a male sponsor. I didn't have anything in common with you women. I looked at the women in Narcotics Anonymous and I said to myself, you're catty, you're bitchy, you gossip, and you'd steal my old man in a hot second. Now let me tell you that I did all those things to you. And the reason why I felt that way about women is because I projected all of my behavior onto every woman that I met because you saw right through me. And a man in my home group pulled me over on the side and he said to me, Gina, if you'd like to learn about men's problems, you can go and speak to men. If you'd like to learn how to be a woman, you need another woman to teach you. Go get yourself a female sponsor. The sponsor that I got ended up being my sponsor for the first 16 years that I was clean. She was my mother, my sister, my teacher, my very best friend, and above everything else, the woman that I most wanted to be like one day when I grew up. And we parted ways in September for a variety of reasons that I don't need to tell you about. But the one thing that I can say is that you've drummed it into my head for so long that if I never leave the basics, I don't have to go back to them. That I knew right away that I needed to get another sponsor, and I needed to do it now. And I'm grateful to this woman who's taken me on under her wing and given herself to be my guide. And you know, if you don't ever leave the basics, you won't have to go back with them. You know, I hear people say sometimes, you know, we talk about in the basic text that the ultimate weapon for the disease of addiction is the recovering addict. One of the things that I feel is one of the scariest things in recovery is the misinformed addict. And you know, sometimes we share things and I don't know what happens, but it's like somebody says it and somebody thinks it sounds really profound, so somebody else says it. And the next thing you know, you're going to meetings and you're hearing it all over the place like it came out of the literature. And one of the things that I hear people say is, well, what keeps me clean might get you loaded. If what keeps me clean might get you loaded, what the hell am I doing? I stay clean by going to meetings, talking to my sponsor, doing service, and working the principles. And if you do that, I guarantee you, you won't get loaded. I don't know, you know, we have a lot of people come out of treatment in New York, and I saw a lot of newer people here. A lot of you might have come out of treatment. And I don't know what they tell you in the treatment centers. I mean, I hear some of it. It's something like one out of 30-something of you is going to make it, or look at the person on your left, look at the person on your right. 6 months from now, two of you aren't going to be here. For those of you here in your very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, let me tell you what our message is. Our message is that an addict, any addict, not one out of 36 of you, not one out of something of you, any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And for anybody in their first NA meeting tonight, welcome home. You don't ever have to use again. When I had 91 days clean, I stayed for my first business meeting. And you elected me secretary of the group. And I need to tell you that you started me on a love of Narcotics Anonymous service. And that woman who became my first sponsor taught me that every day that I had clean, I owed NA a day of service as a debt in gratitude. And I've never forgotten that. And I want to thank those people who stood up for 17 years or more tonight for having kept the doors open for me, that when I came to a meeting, I never found the door closed. I started doing service for the wrong reasons. I'm going to be honest with you. I loved standing up in front of the group, and I had this whole big thing to read, and I got to tell you my name, you know, and I thought I was so full of myself. I was so important. And today I do service to do things like stand up here when somebody comes up to get a basic text, that the newcomer is the bottom line of why we serve. And for anybody who thinks that you've done your best to stay out of service, for anybody here who thinks that you've managed to stay out of having a commitment, let me congratulate you, because whether you did it voluntarily or not, you have joined the Public Information Committee this weekend. To this hotel, to the people in this area, to the people working in this facility, you may very well be their first contact with this fellowship. Your behavior, your actions, your attitude, and the way that you treat the hotel staff and the people in this area are going to be the impression that these people walk away with us as a fellowship. And hopefully we will treat this staff with enough kindness and respect that if any of them have a problem, or any of them have somebody that they know or in their family who has a problem, they're going to tell them, you know what, go on over and see those people down in NA. They got it going on. I grew up in a single-parent household, and I always wanted a daddy. So when I had about a year clean, I met one. And when I had 3 years clean, I married him. He was a nice man. He still is. But we were a terrible couple. And I heard you tell me for such a long time that this was an inside job. And I never understood what you meant by that. The outside for me was what was getting better real quick. I looked better. I had a job. I was married. I had a house in the suburbs. We had money in the bank. I went shopping all the time. I had closets full of clothing. And I found myself with 5 years clean wanting to blow my brains out, not knowing why. I kept trying to make myself feel better from the outside in and hope that the insides were going to catch up with me, and I got to tell you that that doesn't work. I had some clean time in this fellowship, and all I could do was share clean and live dirty. I could quote the basic text up and down. I had a posse of sponsees behind me. I was chair in our area. I sat up in meetings on a throne, and I solved everybody's problems. Everybody comes to me, and I got an answer for everything. And I sat there in arrogant self-righteousness for everybody who came up to me. What's your problem? Be your third step. See me next week. What's going on with you? Read page 101 of the basic text. You'll be okay. I always wanted a softer, easier way than for me to do what was necessary in here, which was to sit down with a sponsor and to get the pen to the paper and to start to work from the inside out. I wanted to leave that relationship for a really long time, and I didn't have the guts to do it. So like a good addict, I waited until I had somebody else's bags packed sitting by the door ready to move in. And when I had someone all lined up, I asked my husband if he would leave. You know, it had become very apparent to me for a long time in 11-step work that God was telling me that it was finally time for me to learn how to live by myself. And I kept telling God, that's nice, I think we'll do it my way now. And I don't know what anybody else's experience with the 11th step is, but I'll tell you what mine is. I have come to understand that God's will is going to be done in my life whether I like it or not. I can either work on the 11th step and I can work on accepting what's happening, or I can let go with claw marks and take it kicking and screaming, but either way, God's going to get his way. So I let go of this one with claw marks and I picked this other guy. And after I asked my husband for a divorce, he promptly turned around and left me for somebody else. And for the first time in my life, I was 29 years old. I was clean for 8 years. I found myself living alone. And I know that this is something that I hear a lot of us struggle with, and for some reason we don't want to talk about that fear of being alone, that fear of not having a partner, that fear of not feeling like a whole person, like we count without somebody else attached to our hip. And it terrified me. And I was coming into meetings, and I wasn't ashamed to tell you that at 29 years old I was sleeping with the lights on because I was living alone for the first time in my life, and I was terrified to sleep in the dark. And what happened was that I actually started to like living by myself. I finally didn't have to kick anybody over in the bed. The toilet seat was always down. I had more than enough closet space. And when I finally let go of something, always, when I can get myself out of the way, God makes it available to me. You know, I've come to believe today that I don't learn anything new. I don't believe that I have anything more to learn about myself. What I do believe is that as I continue in this process, that I gain the increased clarity and awareness to see what's been right in front of my face the whole time. But when I'm finally able to see it, it's always nothing new. And God put this man in my life who is somebody that I never would have chosen. He was clean 2.5 years, a year out on the street and a year and a half behind the walls of New York State Prison. So for those of you who do H&I, thank you, it works. He didn't have a job. He didn't have any education. He wasn't exactly what I thought I was going to end up with, but what he had, and what he still has today, is the ability to love me exactly for who I am and not in spite of me. And I love you, David, and I'm sorry that you're not here. And you know, I have been monogamous for almost 8 years. And I don't know if that impresses you, but I got to tell you, it impresses the hell out of me. This is wonderful service. 7 years ago this month, I found myself pregnant, accidentally. And when I finally got over the shock of it, I actually started to like the idea. And I did all the right things. I went to the doctor, I took my vitamins, I stopped smoking. I went into maternity clothes and I watched my belly start to grow, and I went to the doctor and I heard a little heartbeat on the stethoscope. I was going into my 5th month and I went in for my regular OB appointment, and he put the stethoscope down on my stomach and he moved it around and he moved it around and he moved it around. And he finally looked at me and he shook his head and He said, I'm sorry, you don't have a heartbeat. Your baby's dead. And in a moment, my world shattered. And I stood outside in the parking lot with my husband, and we held on to each other, and we just stood there, and we cried, and we cried. And he finally said to me, what do you want to do? And I thank God that in a program of repetition that you have repeatedly told me what to do when I don't know what else to do, I said, please get me to a meeting. He took me to a meeting, and I allowed you to love me. And I've come to believe that at the lowest points of my life, that if I hold on and I make it through the storm, that God has always presented me with a situation in my life that lets me know that if I don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle, that the blessings of life are not over yet. I had been asked to speak at the banquet at a convention in Texas 3 years before that, and I wasn't able to get there. And I said, if you ever ask me again, I'll be happy to try and come. And I had forgotten all about it. And when I came back from the meeting that night, there was a message from that convention 3 years later asking me to come again. And it didn't erase all of the pain. But I believe that that was my reminder from God that life wasn't over in spite of what was going on. It's been a long, hard struggle for me, and I have a hard time talking about this. I never conceived again after that miscarriage 7 years ago. And there has been nothing in my life that has made me feel more damaged and more less than not being able to have had a child. 3 years ago, I began fertility treatment, because the arrogant person that I am did not want to have a second step in my life and believed that the doctor would be a power greater than myself. I mean, shit, the dog gets pregnant. Why do I need to go to the doctor? I started on fertility treatments, and you know, any time that I have ever sat in a meeting or sat in life and taken your inventory in judgment of what you were sharing and said to myself, I'd never do that. God has somehow always humbled me real quickly that I was doing just exactly that not too long afterwards. And you know, I hear us today, you know, I was in the women's meeting today, and the woman was talking about that when she got here, there were old-timers who told you, sit down, shut up, you know, and that's what I was raised on. Sit down, shut up, you got nothing to talk about. When you get some clean time, you got some experience, you'll have something to say. And those people did not hesitate. If you shared some crazy stuff in the meeting, you weren't making it out the door without them grabbing you and saying, come here and let's talk about what you were talking about. And I hear people here today talk about, well, don't take my inventory. How do you want to get better? Take my inventory. Please take my inventory. I don't always have the clarity to see what I'm doing. I have only gotten better for those of you who have loved me enough to pull my coat and tell me the truth. And when you see me acting unspiritually, do me a favor. Come and tell me about it. Don't stand out in the parking lot and tell everybody else. I don't get better that way. We kill people in this fellowship with gossip. We drive them away by making them feel unwelcome. And for most of us in here, like me, this is the last stop on the block and there is nowhere else to go. And if you drove me out of Narcotics Anonymous, I don't know what I would do because I still don't have any place else left to go. But I started fertility treatments and, you know, I sat in judgment of all of those women in the clinic who were talking about, you know, doing in vitro for their third time, and I rolled my eyes and said, no way, I'll give up. This convention honored me by asking me to share here last year, and I wasn't able to come. I was starting my very first in vitro treatment. And by Thanksgiving of this past year, I was ending my third. And the doctor told me, you need to stop. And you need to accept that you're not going to have your own children. You told me that I can't keep what I have unless I give it away. You told me that the spirituality that I throw out into the world is what's going to come back to me. I'm now waiting on lists for donor eggs and adoption. And I'm waiting for the unconditional love of another woman so that I can be a mother. And I believe that if I continue to love you as unconditionally as I can with my humanness, that this will happen for me too. Recovery has always been wonderful. Life on life's terms is not always easy. I was privileged enough to sponsor a woman who at 2.5 years clean was sentenced to 7 years in the federal penitentiary. And she and I used to write back and forth, and what she said to me one day was, I've come to understand that God is not the God of the suspended sentence. And you know, we come into meetings and we hear people say, you know, I was speeding down the freeway, the cop stopped me, he let me go, God must have been with me. I showed up today for my warrant hearing, got a suspended sentence, God must have been with me. What she was trying to tell me was the fact that she got sentenced to 7 years in federal prison did not mean that God wasn't with her. And the fact that I can't have children doesn't mean that God isn't with me. Life hasn't always come the way that I've wanted it to, but I believe that one day I'm going to have the opportunity to sit down with God and get all of the answers to all of my questions. You know, one of the things that I used to wonder about was why, in the beginning, in New York, all of the addicts who were dying from the HIV virus were those people who had a lot of time. And I remember saying to my sponsor, why are those people dying? You know, not that anybody deserved to die, but it just seemed like the few old-timers we had were the ones who were all dying. And she said to me, you know what? Those are the people who know how to do the service. Those are the people who got the meeting started. Those are the people who started the fellowship here in New York. So I believe that they were taken first so that they can start a meeting there for everybody else. And one day, I'm going to pass from you to them. You know, my husband got sick about 5 years ago. He was diagnosed with a lung tumor. And you know, it's amazing what we can do for other people, you know, that we can't do for ourselves. I mean, if it were any of you calling me, I would have told you, easy does it, let's see what's going on, let's not project me. It's like, oh my God, how much insurance do I have? You know, and I was really beside myself. I was convinced he was going to die. And I picked up the phone and I called this woman, you know, that I was really close to, and I said to her, you know what, this isn't fair. And she said, what's the matter? I said, you know, I'm clean for 12 years. I sponsor women. I do service. I try to be the best person that I can be. I try to show, you know, I show up at my home group. I try to give back to the newcomer. It isn't fair, and I don't deserve this. And she said, Gina, get off of the phone. Get down on your hands and knees, and thank God you haven't gotten in life what you really deserve. And you know, today I am blessed to have luxury problems. And not that I don't take them seriously, because I could sit and piss and moan about them like the best of us. But you know, it is those of you who face chronic illness and life-threatening illness and who come in here and show me that there is still no reason to use who are my heroes every day. And I really haven't found a real good reason to use yet in spite of everything. I will tell you that for anybody who's here who isn't sure that they belong, I truly believe that the normal people in life, whoever they are, don't wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I think I'm going to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting tonight. If you're here, let me suggest to you that you not keep coming back. We've had an awful lot of people in the time that I've been here who wanted to keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back, and one day they didn't make it back again. So if you're here, do yourself a favor and just stay. I have had the privilege and the opportunity to speak to I don't know how many thousands of addicts. I've had the privilege to do God's work in carrying this message. And it's more important to me one day when I'm gone from here that your memories of me are not so much for what I've said but for how I've lived my life. I sit in meetings and I have to tell you that I watch all of you, and because you told me I'm not unique, I believe you're watching me too. Basic text tells us we are each other's eyes and ears. And whatever I say, if you see me, step down from here and act in any way that's contradictory to anything that's come out of my mouth. Everything I said just went out the window. I am not afraid to become vulnerable today and to tell you that today I am working on being a kind, loving, and gentle woman. And that isn't how I want to act, and I want to stab you in the back the minute you turn around. This is really who I want to be today. And this is really what I'm trying to do with my life. For a girl who walked in here who was capable of holding two positions that I could earn money in, and that was on my back or on my knees, I work for a conservative Fortune 500 old boys company, and 3 years ago they made me vice president. And I remember when my boss gave me my promotion and I sat across the desk from him and I got this like stupid grin on my face. And he thinks I'm crazy anyway. And I know he didn't know what I was grinning about, but as he was giving me my bonus package and my new compensation, all that was going through my head is, do you have a clue who I am? Do you have any idea what I've done in my life? But you know what? The truth is, he doesn't. He doesn't have any idea what I've done in my life, because you have given me the ability today to be a responsible, productive member of society, and he doesn't look at me anymore and know what I'm about. And you know what? I remember being in those after-hours clubs in New York. I remember being in those places for a day and a half. I remember opening up the door and squinting to the sun on a Sunday morning when you were rolling out of there, when you've been up there for 30 or 36 hours, and you don't look or smell really good. And I'd be making my way home, and people would be in the street, and they'd be clean, they'd be dressed, they'd be going to church, they had their kids, and they'd grab their kids, and they'd walk around me so that they didn't have to walk by me. I don't ever have to be that person again. My sponsor did not start me in here on the beginning on steps and slogans. She started me from the beginning with, Gina, you need to take a bath, honey. You need to stop putting your dirty hair up in a hat. You need to stop putting perfume on your dirty clothing. And I am grateful to those of you who loved me enough to take me by the hand and help me to grow up and start the journey to becoming a woman that I never dreamt that I could ever possibly be. And you know the greatest miracle that I've gotten from this program? I finally have the ability to live comfortably inside of my own skin and be okay with who I am. I'm going to leave you with a story that if you've ever heard me share, you've heard, so I apologize. And this story to me really sums up what Narcotics Anonymous is about in my life. There was a woman who wanted to learn everything that there was to know, so she went up into the mountains and she found this guru and he gave her a whole pile of books and he said, you study, I'll come back. So she stayed and she read for a few weeks, and he came in one day leaning on a heavy wooden cane and he said to her, have you learned everything there is to know? And she said, no, and he picked up the cane and he whacked her over the head with it. And this same thing went on. He would come in, he would ask her the same question, he would get the same response, and he would take the same action. And one day he came in and he asked her, have you learned all that there is to know? And she said, no. And he picked up the cane and he went to whack her, and she reached out and she grabbed it in midair before it struck her. And she was frightened. She didn't know what he was going to do. And he looked at her and he smiled and he put down the cane and he said, congratulations, you've learned all that you need to know. You have come to accept that you're never going to learn all that there is to know, and you have learned how to stop the pain. And I believe that that is the message that you give me here in Narcotics Anonymous. The longer that I'm clean, the fewer answers that I have. Most of the time, all I have for you is a hug and to tell you that I love you, and you know what? For the most part, for most of us, that's all that we ever needed. If you're in your home group and you see that newcomer, get up and go get them coffee. They might be a newcomer like me who didn't have the self-esteem to do it themselves. Get up and offer them your phone number. They might not feel good enough about themselves to ask you for it. Don't ever assume that just because they don't feel okay with doing it doesn't mean that they don't want this. I'll never forget those of you who loved me enough to reach out and bring me that coffee, who reached out and hugged me in spite of how I looked, who never shied away from me, and who allowed me to call this place home. And I'll just tell you this real quickly, that when I got clean in New York, there weren't 7 NA meetings a week, and we had to go to other places. I'm grateful for those places. I don't knock them. I'm glad that they were there. But I came to a point in my recovery where I found that the longer that I rode the fence, the more uncomfortable it got as those tickets started to stick me up the ass. And I eventually came to the point where I needed to fall on one side of that fence or another, and I'm grateful to tell you today that my life is very simple. I don't believe that this is a complicated, you know, that I'm a complicated person. I'm self-righteous, I'm self-centered, and I'm arrogant. There is nothing, you know, complicated about that. But because I have the ability to complicate anything, I keep my life real simple. I have one home group, I have one sponsor, I have one set of literature I read, and I have one fellowship and one disease. And that keeps it simple. If you're here this weekend, use this as an opportunity. Life is too short and you never know what's going to happen. You have a resentment, let it go. You got somebody you're mad at, go hug them. You got something going on with someone, go work it out. I never know which one of you God is going to send to be the messenger, and I don't want to turn any one of you away because it just might be the person that I happen to like the least. If nobody else has told you today, from the bottom of my heart, let me be the first to tell you that I love you and God loves you also. Have a wonderful convention. If anybody asks you today how Narcotics Anonymous works, you tell them it works just fine. Have a good convention and thank you.